Hey, hey, my fellow dream chasers, it's Princess Fizz here. Welcome to another episode of I Have a Dream Show, bringing you multimillionaires from around the world to hear their unique journeys to success, great business wisdom, free mentoring and inspiration. Now, if you're looking to boost your online presence as a small business owner and stand out from the noise, you have to check out my free 10-day course on how to create an amazing web TV show or podcast for any industry. Go to becomeamediapreneur.com and get instant access to the course, and I'll get you ready for launch within 10 days. If you're looking for a great way to build a strong network and land some high-paying customers, I recommend you check out LinkedIn training course at ihaveadreamshow.com/LinkedIn training. If you've seen my web TV shows and love my makeup, check out Moonstruck's 3D Fiber Lashes, which is the best-selling product by Unique, at ihaveadreamshow.com/beauty. And if you prefer to watch the video shows, then you can go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows, where there's a library of all the I Have a Dream shows to date. And don't forget to become a free member at the ihaveadreamshow.com website for access to free business and marketing trainings and other resources that will help you grow your business. And you'll get added to the newsletter straight to your inbox so you don't miss another show. So now take out your notepads and enjoy the show. Today's guest I'm very, very excited about. He's one of the top, he's rated one of the top network marketing industry, top 20 in the world when it comes to success. And he's coming in live. He'll be talking about how to build relationships to make a million-dollar income, right? So please welcome Steve Mitchell. He's coming in live from Spain. Steve, it's an absolute honor for having you on my show today.
Princess, thank you so much, and thank you. Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to be here and to say hello and say a big welcome to you and all your guests. So thank you for inviting me on.
It's an absolute pleasure, to Steve. It's because of people like you that share so much knowledge that people can kind of learn from directly. So, Steve, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about your background, because I know there's so much that went on over the past few years. If you can kind of take us back through your childhood years, and what was your environment like which environment were you brought up in, and what kind of steps were you taking? What was your environment like at the time?
Well, I've got to have a good memory to go back that far, Princess. I'm an old man in this industry, so I've actually been in the industry of relationship marketing 24 years. Going back even further than that, I had a very lovely family environment. I, like I suppose many of your viewers now, we had adversity in our life. I sadly lost my father in a car accident when I was 12 years old, and I suddenly became the man of the family, so to speak. So I grew up very quickly as far as mentally was concerned. But I had a very loving environment, myself and my two sisters. My mother was an outstanding mother. She did the best she could to bring us up in a difficult time, because obviously, you know, my father was the breadwinner and we'd lost that income. And so we were, I suppose, initially classically middle class, but our income dropped and so did us. So we had many challenges when we lost my father. But, you know, as you say, through adversity, basically we become stronger. And that's how I started my childhood. I went through a traditional education, did quite well. I liked sports. I was quite sporty. I didn't really like school, I'm going to be honest. But I kind of liked it. I was a bit arty, and I ended up leaving school and going to do an art degree as a graphic designer. Even though at school I was quite good at art, I suddenly went to art college and realized I was very average. I realized that what I thought was quite good skills, all of a sudden I was surrounded by people that just excelled and were so much more gifted than I was. So I probably did a year and a half of my degree, and then sort of thought, no, I need to go traveling, Princess. So I spent a couple of months going around the States, particularly the West Coast of America, when I was about 18, 19 years old. Came back from the States and then did a bit more traveling, spent nearly a year in Australia. And then eventually, about 22, ended up back on the shores of the UK, which ended up where I've spent a lot of my time.
Right, right. So that's, it's amazing what happened at such a young age. I mean, with your mum, was she kind of a business owner or was she working in a job? What were you exposed to at the time?
Well, she was actually one of the receptionists at our school, my low school. So she did a part-time job. My father was a sales director. So I suppose if I've got some of the bug of being involved in sales, and we are all in sales, everything we do, everything from just marketing our personality to, you know, trying to sell our kids on trying to get them to do something they don't want to do. We sell all the time. So if I have any slight gene of sales in me, I suppose it came from my father, who was in corporate life, quite high up and enjoyed his job. But my mother was just a housewife. That is anything but just a housewife. I know what's involved in bringing up a family, and she probably worked harder than even my father did when he was around. But she's gone on now and got into property, quite funnily enough, starts her own business as an entrepreneur. She's a much older lady now, right. But she has been highly successful as her own business owner with quite a large property portfolio over the years. So it's interesting, she came from our background of sort of housewife bringing up children to ended up being the world that many of your viewers are looking at, which is business ownership and working for themselves.
That's fantastic. The reason I asked this question, Steve, is because when people are kind of brought up in a hard-working environment where parents are working all hours of the day or you know, just kind of exchanging hours for income, they've got that mindset. They think that that's what it takes. That's what it's about, you know, because, you know, if you do a job, you have to work very, very hard in your job to get a certain amount of income back. So breaking away from that, I just wanted to highlight, what did you actually do? So when you traveled, when you came back, what were you doing at that time then?
Well, that's a great question, because one of the things that triggered in my father's, you know, when my dad was around up till sort of when I was 12 years old, one thing I realized was I didn't see a great deal of him. A hugely loving father, yeah. But we were living down on the south of England, and he was working in the city of London. So he would literally get on a train at 6 in the morning, and quite honestly, Princess, he didn't come in from work at nighttime when I was awake. So he didn't see his children, me included, awake during a working week. So, and it's when you start to think about that, he wasn't alone. There's an awful lot of, I've got another lovely friend that does still the corporate commute, and he has a young son, and he's always leaving early, coming in late, and he doesn't see his son awake during the business week. So I think right in the beginning, I thought, I don't want a life like that. There was a bug that perhaps was instilled in me that I thought there must be another way. So I came back from Australia. I've never really had a corporate job. I've never really had a job, so to speak, and worked for anyone. And I think it probably stems back to my memory of it was it just took my father away. It wasn't something that I really warmed to, because him having a job, yes, it gave us a lovely standard of living, but truthfully, really what I wanted to do was see my dad, and I never saw him during the week. So very early on, I always wanted to be my own boss. So when we came back from Australia, that was the sort of start of my sort of self-employed world, so to speak.
Excellent. So how were you exposed to this idea, even, that you can actually start your own business? I mean, was there someone around you at the time that maybe kind of you thought, I could do this as well? Were you looking at other people, modeling them? Was there something going on around you?
Yeah, I had some lovely mentors throughout my whole career. I've had amazing mentors, and maybe touch on a couple that have helped me, and it may help your viewers as we go along. But I think really what happened was we were in Australia, three young guys. I didn't have a lot of money. I used to do a bit of DJing, and I was doing a bit of DJing in Australia for a radio station there. Right. And I just didn't have enough money, and in the end the money ran out. We had to leave Australia because I had to suddenly decide I've got to actually get into the real world of making a living, and more, making a lifestyle. Right. And so I one thing, this is the craziest thing, we used to have delivered three young guys sharing a nice apartment in Brisbane. We never cooked. I know that sounds dreadful, but we never cooked. So we always used to have food sort of brought in, or we'd go to the takeaway or whatever. And yeah. One thing that we had was pizzas delivered to our door. Now, right. Bearing in mind, we're talking now, oh my, we're talking 30 plus years ago. Right. So I suddenly had this idea, well, there's no such thing in the UK of having pizzas delivered to the door. Now, all your viewers, if they're in the UK or any country, they may go, Steve, we can get any food delivered to the door, but we're going back when there was, this just didn't exist. Right. So my slight claim to fame, Princess, was I was one of two people to bring in home-delivered pizzas to the UK. And we ended up setting up, we ended up having that business for 9 years. For seven of them, we were very successful. We had five restaurants. We had an import business. And that was the start. So answering your question, it came from three broke lads living off pizza on the riverbank in Brisbane, thinking, maybe I'll take this idea and take it back to the UK. So that was the start of my self-employed world.
Excellent, excellent. That's amazing there. So you took action on an idea, literally. You kind of got together with the right people around you, and you took this kind of idea that you had of delivering pizza to the door and took action on it, and it became successful. So why didn't you carry that on then, Steve? What happened there?
Well, we had the business as it went very well for 7 years, gave us a very nice lifestyle. I ended up getting married, had two young children, and we lived a very nice life from that business. And I realized, and this is something that's really important to all your viewers, I realized I personally didn't have the skills for everything. Right. One of my very early mentors in my life was an uncle I had, a very wealthy, very, very successful business owner, uncle, who was in engineering. And he would say the same thing, and he instilled this idea in me, was to basically create a sort of a round table of skills around me. So I learned that very, very early on. My uncle Tony, beautiful man, still a massive mentor in my life, basically realized what he was good at and what he was not good at, right. And he would position people around him who could bring extra skills. And that's really how, in our restaurant business, how I did it. My sister was very good at administration and financial controls, so you know, I partnered with her as a director of the company. We brought in other partners, and so to speak, we created this sort of round table of different skills. And I was good in certain areas, but not good in many other areas. So we had the business for 9 years. Seven were very good. Last 2 years, not so good, and probably like many people that arrive at getting into this industry of direct sales or relationship marketing, many people have really come there as a second chance. Well, that's really what happened to us. My business, quite simply, the market changed and Steve Mitchell did not change fast enough. Right. Competition came in. Everybody was making pizza. Every restaurant, every supermarket had a deli counter, and our market just went down and down, and I blame no one except myself. I should have reacted faster. I thought somewhat arrogantly we were strong and our business was secure, and you should never adopt that. You should always be prepared to change, always be prepared to emerge, transform, innovate all the time. Well, I didn't. And I lost everything. We had a very nice lifestyle, lost very big houses. I saw lovely German motor cars getting towed away up the hill. And people used to say, Steve, you bounce back a stronger person. You know, well, I'll be honest, Princess, it was the most stressful, probably the darkest time in my life, I think. I used to have hair before the pizza business, I think. So it was a time really that I realized, you know, we lost a lot. I ended up going bankrupt. I ended up, and I'm very open with we're talking 25, 24 years ago. But I realized I learned a huge amount from it, and I learned an awful lot of things I would do differently. So that's really how I started, I guess, in direct sales, in relationship marketing, because at the time, I needed to do something. I needed to do something.
Excellent. There's so much what you just said there, in what you just shared with us. Because first of all, traditional marketing, traditional business that you just started, can you talk about the freedom aspect of that? I know it's starting your own business, but people that are looking to start their own business, the reason why I kind of want to put a highlight on it, because it's okay that if your business sets off and you get your, you know, you make sales and you get, what about the freedom part of it, you know? Were you exchanging a lot of hours to keep your business going? Was it taking away that kind of freedom part of you?
Oh, completely. I mean, it owned me. It really did. It was, I'm talking about the pizza and pasta business now. The hours we worked were quite crazy hours. And if you actually, and it's a great point you make there, is if you consider the exchange of an hour for an exchange of financial return,
yes.
I probably could have just gone and got a job and probably been earning more money. I mean, yes. We had a good lifestyle, but I was working 80, 90 hours a week most of the time. And there was no freedom from it. I can remember, this is a little story. My sister was a co-director. And I used to, with my family, as you try and do, break away and have a holiday. Yes. And I can remember being picked up from the airport by my sister, and she would drive us back from the airport. And I'd say, Liz, you know, how's it been? How's the restaurants been? How's the sales? You know, how's it all been going? She said, Steve, we'll catch up tomorrow. Let's get you back from your holiday. Relax. You know, I said, no, I want to know. How's it all gone? The 2 weeks, what have they been like? And this would go on, Princess. She would say, no, we'll talk tomorrow. And right. I was getting a knot in my stomach, just the drive back from the airport.
Yeah.
And by the time I got home, my holiday had long gone. She'd already told me about one of the managers had run off with the takings, and suddenly the staff had a fight with one of the chefs, and, you know, all this terrible stuff. And I would... All of a sudden, I realized I don't own a business here. This business owns me. It really does own me.
Yeah.
And I suppose a consequence of why we went bankrupt and lost everything was I was just completely burned out with it, completely exhausted by it, and keep pushing it forward, a conventional business. And you have to remember, every restaurant we were opening, this wasn't like a little mini franchise like some of your viewers can start, whether it's online or you know, for maybe just a few hundred dollars or something. This, every restaurant was costing us, you know, probably $150,000 if you did it just in, you know, we were obviously in pounds, and we had five of them. So it was a big investment, lots of stress, lots of headache. And I just realized when it all went, I think I realized there has to be another way.
Right.
This risking all to gain all, to get a lifestyle, there must be another way. Now, it was forced on me to find another way, but thank goodness it did. Thank goodness it did.
Excellent. Well, there you go, guys. Absolutely extraordinary story that Steve is sharing. And if you are looking to start a traditional business, I'm getting so many questions in. I'll keep up with them as we go along. But there is a question coming from Stella. And obviously, she said it requires a lot of investment to start a traditional business. Is there a better way online? We're going to get to that, Stella. So, Steve, so obviously, having this experience, you know, this very heavy experience of running a traditional business, it takes away your freedom. A lot of man hours go into it, looking after the staff and the expenses and all this kind of stock stuff as well. It obviously put you in a frame of mind, there is a better way, right? So you got into network marketing at that point. Was that the right point for you to actually explore other ways of making income?
Yes, Princess. So basically, my business went, we lost everything. I was going through some personal challenges with my marriage and whatever, so I was trying to keep the family home, keep my ex-wife at the time, obviously, was it, and the children, you know, that was their home and that was really important. So I also then had to go and find another accommodation that Steve had to live in, so that added to my financial pressures. So I ended up, my ex-father-in-law found me a job, actually, at IBM. Right. I was standing there doing a night shift in an IBM factory with a white jacket on, with a clipboard, And this will just show you that really, we, you know, when you go to all people that are perhaps have got some level of success, and I'm so lucky to be able to say that that has happened to us, usually they've had to fight to get there in the end, and we're no different. We have done the craziest things. You know, when I say crazy, anything that will really, if it pays a bill and makes sure, obviously legal, ethical, and moral, but what I'm saying is I've done things that really, where people would say, well, why not just go off and, you know, just start a business? It doesn't work that way because you still got bills.
Yeah.
And most people start in their own business. Most people start it in a part-time way, and that was exactly what happened to me. I was doing a night shift in an IBM factory, the most boring job ever, taking disk drives out of these computers and putting them in these computers, standing there and watching a green or red light go red or green. And the exciting bit was when it went red, because I gave it a cross instead of a tick. Right. That was the highlight of my night shift, you see.
Yeah.
But I started, a friend of mine just said, Steve, are you open? Do you keep your options open? And a lot of people use that line. But the truth was, I said, are you kidding me? I mean, I'm in a night shift part-time job to pay my bills that I hate. I've got to get my lifestyle back. I've got to give my children the life I've promised them. In my mind, I've promised them. So I was very open. So that was my first, I should say, exposure to network marketing, to relationship marketing. I was invited along to a hotel. It's a little bit cliche, but that's how it was 20 years ago. And I sat there, and I'm going to be honest, I did not understand everything, but I liked the concept that I could work for myself for a very little cost, a very little sort of outlay to get going, unlike my old restaurant business, that was a big outlay. And I could actually be my own boss and run it part-time while I was doing my... So I was doing my night shift, coming in the early hours of the morning. I would literally just have a bite to eat. I would then get some sleep. I'd then have a shower sort of late afternoon. And then I would start building my home-based business for 4 or 5 hours. And then I would go off and do a night shift in the evening. And I did that for about a year and a half. That's how I sort of started in this industry.
That's absolutely amazing. One thing I want to touch upon, Steve, I mean, from going from having success, right, and losing everything, and then going back to a job, okay, that's psychologically a lot of pressure on a person, you know, because obviously you're very independent at the time, and then going to work for someone. How did you stay motivated? How did you stay focused? How did you not just lose it? You know, just say, okay, I'll give up. I'm just going to go into the security part of things. You know, I want to be secure with the job. I know what's coming in. I know my bills are being paid. That's it. I don't want to explore anything else. How did you kind of move away from that trap that kind of happens, you know, in life?
Well, the name of your show is the reason why, because effectively, if I'd given up, if I'd say, right, well, I can make enough money, I hate my job, but ultimately, at least this is paying my bills, then frankly, I've given up on my dreams. I've given up on my, you know, what I want, and then all I'm doing is existing, and I cannot, I mean this respectfully, that there are many people in a job, and it's very disrespectful if we say they are wrong and we are right. And I don't mean that in any way, but me personally, it made my dreams reinforced even stronger, and the desire to achieve them even stronger. I used to literally, I can remember going to, then we had a thing called a Sony Walkman. Now, you're a lovely young lady, so you won't remember this, but the Sony Walkman was a little cassette player that we used to have. Uh-huh. And I used to have everything from Jim Rohn to Zig Ziglar to, you know, to John Kalench, to all the mentors I've had in my life. I'd have them on audio tapes. So when we would have a break, a lunch break, or we'd have a, because it was very boring, the night shift job was very, very boring. So you'd get a break every hour just to sort of clear your mind. Well, a lot of people would just rush off and have a cigarette or whatever they did. I would go and put a little cassette on and just sit there with a cup of coffee and just get 15 minutes of reinforcement in my mind. So that was the start of regarding how important mentors and personal coaching was to me. So I stayed focused on my dream, really, exactly as your show is.
Excellent. That's absolutely fabulous. Guys, if you read between the lines, Steve didn't actually let his external factors affect him. He actually made a decision to listen to these cassettes, because this is where, I think this is where the magic happened, isn't it, Steve? When you get reprogrammed your mind, regardless of what's going on around you, you kind of get fed with good, positive information, and it kind of pumps up those dreams and the desire to actually achieve something, even though your external kind of environment isn't showing that. So you kind of move away from what's going on in reality, right?
Absolutely. It's that the whole point really is you want to do things that reinforce what you want from your life. You want to, it can be it doesn't have to be material, it doesn't have to be money. Money happens to be the vehicle that just gives us choices, gives us options, and maybe talk a bit more about that later. But that without question, you have to reinforce that. You have to find a way, because it's like everything. It's like the circles that we move in. If we gravitate within the circle, then the circle gets smaller, and then we gravitate a little bit more, the circle gets smaller again. Whereas if we keep opening the envelope, and I know that's a cliche, but pushing the circle of that reinforces your dream, reinforces what it is you want from your life, and really, and so. It, from my point of view, I got stronger from being in a job rather than shrinking, and rather than, you know, it's a great point you made. It just made me stronger. It made me more want to not have that as my life.
That's absolutely beautiful. So when you explored the network marketing, what was your first feeling about it? I mean, I don't know what kind of product or system that you were exposed to, but were you kind of thinking this is not right, or a pyramid scheme or anything like that? Did anything like that cross your mind?
I have to be honest, it didn't. So, but I'd had my head buried in mozzarella cheese and pepperoni sausage, and so I suppose this guy, when he invited me to this, and it wasn't Amway, and I have great respect for my friends in Amway, because they are the granddaddy of the network marketing industry. I know there's many indirect sales, but he said, Steve, it's a little bit like Amway, and I'm going, Amway? No, I've never heard of Amway, you know. So I was buried, like trying to sort of in my own, as you say, conventional business in the past. So to me, it was just exciting, the fact I already had the concept of leveraging, in other words, taking an idea and duplicating it, and that's why we opened 5 restaurants.
Right,
but
right.
Every time I did that, it cost us, you know, $150,000 every time, and much massive risk, massive exposure, you know, massive stress that went with it. But I had the concept of leveraging. So right. When somebody with a little whiteboard suddenly says, well, Steve, you have the ability to, you know, just maybe leverage yourself. In other words, take the 10 hours you can put in, but you could be paid on 10 people who right. are putting in 10 hours. To me, that made perfect sense, because that's what I was trying to do with my restaurants, you see. And it's, I mean, on a much greater scale, it's just what McDonald's do, following a system, having a structure, leveraging themselves by saying, we have an idea, let's rather than try and sell 1 million burgers in one store, let's try and sell 100,000 in 10 stores. So it was that, I was already aware of the concept of leveraging, you know, my own time, making more of the time I could put in, Princess.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, we've got a question coming in relation to this. I hope, Steve, if you can give some enlightenment to this person. It's Phil coming in from UK. Thank you very much, Phil, for joining the show. He's saying that what top 3 things should I look for when joining a program online? And I'm new to the network marketing industry. There's so much out there, but I'm finding difficulty to choose a program that will suit me. What is your advice on this?
It's a great question, and it's very the answer is somewhat personal to what people like to do. So the first thing you've got to do, you've got to enjoy it, because if you don't enjoy it, right. very soon you're gonna stop doing it. So really, the first thing to look for is it something you would enjoy doing? You know, right. the people you're going to hang out, if it's an online business, is it something you like and feel enthusiastic about? Is it not? Don't just think about, will I make money? Will I make money? Think about, I actually like this. This is something that interests me. So the first thing I would do is find something that's fun, something that you really like doing. Second thing, I personally, and this is obviously only an opinion, and I'm very respectful, everybody else will have a different opinion, but I personally never go for startup businesses. The reason for that is, sadly, and Princess, you've interviewed a lot of people, you know this,
Yes. You're
a great advocate of the professionalism of the industry, and thank you for that. Mm-hmm. But the problem with many startup businesses, they go in with good intention, they really do, but they usually go in underfunded, they usually go in underskilled, they don't have enough skills in place, perhaps they don't have enough infrastructure, they don't realize what computer systems cost when they want to go multilingual. So all these things create a casualty on the startup business.
Right.
So what you find, and it is a sad statistic of our whole industry, online, network marketing, direct sales, is that about 80% of startup businesses do not make their third birthday. So Right. Me personally, and I say this with absolute caution, a disqualifier, is I personally never choose startup businesses because I'm actually playing against the odds that they will actually stay around. And the reason for that, just to explain, I always build long-term residual incomes.
Right.
So if I'm going to do that, then really quite simply is that the business has to stay around. It's rather like any of your viewers putting money into a pension, right, and then all of a sudden, 2.5 years in, that pension company goes out of business, and you're going, whoa, I've been investing my money in that. So that's my second reason, is I always go for a 3-year-plus company. Right. The third thing really would be from just people you want to be around. Surround yourself with people that you feel can contribute to the greater why. And what I mean by the why is, every single person on this program now will have her own individual why. Some will say, Steve, I just want to make money. I want to get out of debt. I want to just have more holidays. I want to be able to eat out more often, have more fun. But ultimately, yes, the money's the vehicle, but the why is the thing. Now, what the person's why is will determine what business they should go for. Because then they have people, we chose the company we're aligned with because of the people that we're surrounding ourselves with, because they're congruent to what Yvette, my wife, and I want.
Right.
So the third reason is find people you want to hang out with. That would be my advice.
Excellent. Absolutely fantastic. There you go, Phil, for that. We've got another one coming in. This is a good question. Thank you, Laura, for tuning in. She is saying that majority of these systems make the top people get rich and the others just don't make any money. What can you explain what comp plans are? What is the best kind of comp plan to go for? And why is it that it is kind of like a pyramid scheme? Well, bless her, but I understand what she's saying. When it comes to certain comp plans, they do kind of cater for the top people. What's your take on that, Steve?
It's a very subjective subject, Princess, because your guess there is absolutely right. Firstly, people say it looks like a pyramid scheme. Yeah, in structure, in shape, it is. So let's be clear. But then, as we've often said, that is the structure that really a lot of institutions use. A lot of institutions that, the services, I'm talking about the armed services, they're all structured. You have officers, and then you'll have corporals, and then you go to the schools. You have a head teacher, then you'll have department heads. So the reason it's shaped like a structure is because most people can only deal with about half a dozen, 5 or 6 people. So what you do is, in an effective way. So what happens is one person deals with 5 or 6, and then those people deal with 5 or 6. Well, before long, you've got the shape of a pyramid. So your guest is absolutely right. That is not the marketing model. That is just the shape. That's just the way it's shaped, okay? Absolutely nothing wrong with the shape. The marketing model, answering your question about compensation plans, I'm very opinionated on this, and I'll try and be calm, because there are certain plans that I am very that I find very frustrating, because the way they uphold their story is they will, and again, your viewer is absolutely right, they will have maybe four or five people that are sitting at the top of a compensation plan structure, and they're making an absolute load of money, And they are getting rich. There is no question about that. But then they propagate a story, join this business, based on their success, that anyone can come and get that. Sadly, that compensation plan doesn't lend itself to the people joining ever being those five or six people. Right. And the way, the reason that is because the compensation plan rewards people that happen to just, let's be clear, get lucky. And I've been lucky enough to be in that position, so I'm aware of this.
Right.
What I'm saying is they got lucky in that plan. These people joining now who are living off the, hey, join now, make money, business op, get rich quick, all this, they just stay poor. I don't mean poor in character, I mean financially poor. Right. So there is several plans, and it would be rude to point them out now, but I'm privately happy to give an opinion on those. There are plans and companies that do that.
Right.
I particularly chose a company to align with that is not interested in that. They're not, the people at the top do very well.
Right.
But in relative to the amount of sales, frankly, you know, they do very well, but the money is more given to the base of a business.
Right,
let me explain it another way. It's rather like people joining a football team. The people that just come on right now to get on the and run onto the pitch, they are the ones that are given all the attention and given the financial resources to grow.
Right.
And the reason for that, now, our company, the one I work with, is not alone. There are other companies, so let's be clear. But what I'm saying is there are two really different plans. One lives off five or six stories that tell the world you'll get rich, and a few people hope that that will happen. The other type of comp plans are more focused on long-term, a longevity type of plan, where people come in, they get success. And I'm talking, you know, just maybe $1,000, $1,500 a month. But hey, let's be clear, that can make a lot of difference to a huge amount of people right now. It really can. So I'm being very choosy with my words, because I don't want to be rude about any company, because there are all many great companies. But please, if any of your viewers are looking at compensation plans, my advice would be avoid the ones that have four or five people going make money. And most people are not. Try and find a company that really is about servicing and taking care of the new person, the brand new person joining. Sorry, that was a little bit of a, hopefully that helped answer.
Yeah, absolutely does. It's absolutely clear. Thank you. Laura's saying thank you for the answer. Excellent. So, so Steve, you're amazing proof from your record that whatever system that you've joined, you've had success in. You haven't just got lucky in. There is obviously a strategy, a method that you're doing. So for the interest of my viewers, I just want to say that if you are joining a system, obviously looking at certain things that you need to look at, if it's global, if the environment's right, if the products are good, once you've made that decision and you're not really getting success in that, you need to understand that you have to be a certain type of person with certain skill set and with a certain drive to make these systems work. It's not the systems that define you, it's you. Whatever you join, you should be able to kind of be successful in. So Steve, I think you're an amazing example of that. You've got a really good track record of whatever system that you've joined, you've had excellent success in. Can you share with the audience what's your take on that, and what kind of strategies or skill sets that you've learned that regardless of whatever you join now, you'll be successful in? It's not the system that defines you.
It's, again, a very, very good question. I will be clear that I was not one of those people that got into this industry
right.
And suddenly went you know, was a Star Trek Commander princess by Thursday. You know, that was, I was one of the, I'm probably like all your viewers, that perhaps some of them have got into this industry, whether it's online marketing, internet marketing, direct sales, network marketing. They've probably got in and may have had a little bit of success or haven't. Well, that was me 20 or so years ago. Right. I built my business part-time for nearly 18 months when I was doing my night shift job. So because I had to, I had no choice. Yeah. So if people say, can you build it part-time? Absolutely, and I'm testament of that fact. But we stayed with it, and I got it wrong, and I got it wrong, and I got it wrong. But I had some lovely mentors that I listened to. And I can remember a defining moment where it was actually my daughter's school. We were behind on the school fees, and I tried to keep them in these private schools when we were making money, and now I was broke, and right. I was trying to keep them there, and I got a letter, and I've kept the letter, Princess, and it basically said, in summary, please do not bring your daughter to the school gates, because we do not want to embarrass her by saying she cannot come in. Now, this is a school my daughter had worked really hard at, got great grades, all her lovely friends were there, she'd been there since she was literally kindergarten, and here was Dad going to have to go along to the school gates, hold her hand, and basically say, darling, you're not, say goodbye to your friends because you're never going to see them again, not in this school. So this was a big defining moment in my network marketing career, and I was about a year and a half in building part-time, not getting great success, you know, and maybe some of your viewers can relate to that. And I thought, this has got to change. This has to change. So I went to my lovely sponsor and mentor, who's still a very good friend, said, what am I doing wrong? He said, Steve, you're not doing anything wrong. You're just not doing enough of what's right.
Right, right.
And he was telling me that I was very arrogant. You know, I'd come out of my own business for 9 years. I thought I knew everything about this new business. What I should have done was I should have just gone and asked. I should have said, and that's what I would encourage all your viewers, find a mentor, find someone that you can work closely with. So that was like the changing point. I was getting to the point of, I even jokingly say now, everybody writes a book, Princess, so about what they do. It's just one of the, you know, things of this industry. I'm going to write a book. Well, I'm going to write a book about all the ways you do not build a network marketing business, because I've probably done them. You know, I've made every mistake and everything else. So, but I learned then, my mentor brought me in about a year and a half in when I needed to suddenly, all of a sudden, I had a real strong why to keep my daughter in her school. And I realized that there was a system. And there was a system I was not following. I was doing it the way or Steve's way. Right. And I was doing it Steve's way. Well, the minute I started to follow the system, the minute I started to basically do the steps exactly as they were, and I eventually said to my lovely sponsor and friend, I just said, listen, whatever you do, I'm going to be like a shadow, and if you do it, I will do it. And that's exactly what happened. And it was the turning point in my networking career. It was when we then started to make reasonable income that turned into significant income, and now into very significant income. It was the point of realizing there is a proven system. And if I go back to the original question, this has just come in my mind, the original question you asked about what should someone look for, the system is important, but it needs to be a proven system, if that makes sense. Not just somebody, oh, by the way, Princess, I've got this great idea about how we're going to build this online business. It has to be proven to get results. So really, that was the changing point for me, identifying the importance of following a system that is proven to work, and then doing it, working it, rolling the sleeves up and getting on with it. Excellent.
You've highlighted some amazing points there, Steve. So basically, looking for a company that's been around and has a proven track system of creating leaders in the system that they follow. Secondly, about being coachable. Guys, this is so important when you actually start a business. Sometimes we kind of feel that we know it all, and we do think that we know what to do in this business. but you have to be coachable, okay? You have to unlearn everything, start from scratch, and kind of follow exactly what these people are doing to become successful. And I think, thirdly, that the why. I think, Steve, that's so important. You know, so when people join, they join half-heartedly. You know, they're not actually really in it, and they think, okay, if I do it, great. If not, then, you know, I'll just let it go or go back to plan A. Plan B, is it? Plan B is another thing, isn't it, Steve, where you kind of think, okay, I'm going to do this business, but I've got a plan B lined up in the background. It kind of it distracts you from creating results. So that's another thing I want to ask Steve about, having a plan B. But guys, this is exactly it. You have to have a huge why. With Steve's why, it was the fact that he couldn't, you know, carry on the school with his daughter. You know, that's a huge kind of emotional pressure there, and it kind of makes you serious about taking actions on your business. And it changes your frequency, doesn't it, Steve, when you've got this huge kind of why?
You do. I mean, Tony Robbins talks about it, Princess, as the pain-pleasure principle. Of we will, you know, do people do more towards getting pleasure in their life, getting a better quality of life, driving a nice car, living in a nice house, or do we actually take action out of the pain? When it actually is, somebody's going to take away your house, or it's not about driving the car, they're going to come and repossess your car keys. And without question, it's unfortunate, but as human beings, we do take much more action out of the pain principle than the pleasure principle. So it really was, that was the why in my case. And I would urge every single one of your viewers to really anchor and dig down on what their why is. And if, you know, if I had private time with any of them, if they ever said to me, Steve, I just want to make more money, we would go, why? Why? What was it you want? And they said, well, I just want to have more holidays. Why? Well, I just want to be able to go and sit in the sun. No. Why? Excellent. Well, truthfully, I don't spend enough time with my children. Ah, now we're getting to the why. Yeah. So you feel it. So every why has to be anchored down onto something very, very strong, because, and this is my belief about anybody starting their own business, Princess. Anyone, if you can remember the why, you keep focused on the why, then really everything else, you know, drops into place. I can teach you how. You can teach, Princess, you can teach people how to run their own business. All the many, many very experienced experts and, you know, successful people that are on this program now can teach people the how. But when it's the adversity, it's the challenges, it's the issues, the bumps in the road, you know, that knock you off the bike, you get back on. If you can remember the why, if your viewers can stay anchored on the why. So it's a great point you make. It really is so important, so important.
Excellent, excellent, Steve. There you go. Absolutely fantastic. Right, so plan B, Steve, this is a huge thing. I'm very, very passionate about having no plan B and fixing yourself on plan A. What's your idea about this idea of having a plan? Is it safe to have a safety net in the background? What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's even safe to have a safety net. I think it's essential to have a safety net. Right. I think in this environment right now, with things, you know, the only constant is change.
Right.
So the only thing we know absolutely will stay the same is the fact that change will always be coming. So what I'm saying is people have to be prepared for change. It's going to happen. So if you're focused on one path to get you the lifestyle you want, not just for you, but your loved ones and the people around you, if you're focused just on having only that one path, then quite honestly, you're hoping that change doesn't come your way. You really are gambling, I guess, is the right word. So I do believe in a plan B. I really do. And I believe in, even now, I mean, I'm absolutely 100% committed, and I only ever build with one company. That's me again.
Right.
That may be slightly outspoken, but I only ever focus on one opportunity. But my plan Bs are the money we earn, we invest in property and we invest in shares. And so, you know, I'm very much of the Robert Kiyosaki mindset, that where we have, you know, different forms of making our money work for us. So I believe my plan B is to basically have different other investments and so on. I only pursue one opportunity, but then that's a personal choice. It doesn't mean that's the only way. It's just a personal thing. But oh, I believe so. Everybody has to have another option. They have to have something that they're focused on. Because when change comes and they weren't ready for it, then so be it. And then all of a sudden, it isn't just a case of a door closed. It gets slammed, and people, you know, this is the big thing that people always say, yeah, but another door opens. I say, yeah, but you've got to be prepared to be looking for the other door open.
Excellent.
If you're so focused and so, you know, I had a quick 30-second story. I had a gentleman I was talking to this morning, and we had one scenario, in fact, two guys, but same sort of scenario. And he was talking to one. They'd both been made redundant, two guys. And he said, Steve, I want to chat to him about the business. He might be open for it. And I said, here's one guy. One guy's been in a job for 25 years. It's all he's ever known. He's never had a plan B, never had the option. All of a sudden, the door is slammed because he's been made redundant, and this is true. He is so busy, focused, and he's so depressed and so low looking at that slammed door. Princess, he's not even looking around at other doors. The other guy hated his job. He gets made redundant. He sees that door slam shut, and he's going, good riddance. And he's immediately looking around for plan Bs. So really, please understand, not everybody is ready for a plan B. But if you aren't answering your question, yeah, everybody should have one. I really do believe that.
That's the idea of actually growing. This is a positive plan B, but the reason why I was mentioning the other plan B, where, you know, when people are probably in a job and they want to escape from that job, and they see, like, they want to join an opportunity, they join the opportunity, but they've always got that job in the background, a kind of as a safety net to protect them from, if your plan A doesn't work out, then you've got your job to go back into. What about that kind of scenario?
Well, to me, I'm a massive supporter of that. I believe everybody should have the ability to start their own business. Right. I just think it's great for the brain. It's just for the mind, and because you're working for yourself. You're not working to build someone else's dream. You're working towards your own dream. So I very much believe in that. But I do believe everybody can start their own business working from home, a home-based business, part-time. We did it for nearly a year and a half before we decided we made enough money to go full-time. But I think by having your own business, what you're having is the ability, whatever. This is something that hit home to me very, very early on in my career. Even if I had a job, and I was paid, oh, let's say $50 an hour. Let's say $50 an hour, which is a pretty good rate. The reality is, you can guarantee if I'm being paid $50 an hour, I am generating probably $100 an hour.
Right.
Because nobody pays someone. So I will always be paid less than I'm personally worth.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, but that, and maybe many of your viewers feel the same way. I know what I'm worth. I believe enough in myself. You know, there's an old saying, you know, don't dare to doubt my belief, because I believe in me.
Excellent.
And that's really where, you know, my feeling is from, is that, you know, really is up from a point of view, doing it part-time and having the ability to build part-time gives us the chance to build a second option, a second choice, at a worth that we are worth. In other words, reward ourselves. Now, let's be clear. Starting a business, every one of your viewers will start a business, and in the end, they will put in way more work than they're actually getting in reward.
Right.
But if they're doing it with a good business, if they've chosen to partner with a good business, their income will go up. If they're following a system, they've got proven mentors, and they literally, their income will go up. So in the beginning, their effort is more than they're making. But that's classic home business, classic self-employment. But here's the joy. If their income will go up, their work rate consistently the same.
Right.
I've got people now that I've worked with, still they're only building part-time, but they're building 15 hours a week. They are making money as though they are working 1,000 hours a week. They're only putting in 15 hours. Why? because that's the ability of that plan B that you talked about. Build it part-time, but your income will continue to grow. And with a good company, with the right company, that absolutely happens. And I've helped tens of thousands of people achieve exactly that.
Exactly. And that's where the freedom kind of part kicks in, guys, where you're putting in the same amount of hours but earning more than what you put in. So that's absolutely fantastic. We can go into detail about that, but moving on, there's so much to talk about still, Steve. Steve, comfort zone. This is something that a lot of people get stuck in. I know you built an amazing business, a topic of the show, building relationships and kind of building friendships to make your income. But some people are very, very scared of talking to people. Was this an area that you kind of struggled with? Was it easy for you to, was there any area that you went out of your comfort zone to work for your business?
Initially, I wasn't a naturally extrovert kind of guy. I mean, I can chat now, but I'm an old man, Princess. I've been in this industry a long time. So I've learned to get comfortable at talking to people. So if you have viewers that say, I'm not very good at talking to people, don't worry, that was me. I mean, that was, you know, my wife and I, we didn't have those skills. I knew how to make pizzas. I was locked in a restaurant most of my time. I wasn't even really front of house. Right. You know, I had managers that did that. So I've learned to get, I suppose, better at people's skills, right, and build the relationship very much so. But it was something that it was a book actually I read by Alan Pease, and it was called Questions Are the Answer. Right. And it's funny because I've now since taught my children the same concept. And the idea was how I got comfortable at speaking to people. Right. And I do believe all business, by the way, and let me explain this, transcends from relationships first. Let me just say that again. The relationship comes before the marketing. I'm in relationship marketing, but even in an online business, people need to stop hiding behind keyboards and stop hiding behind things that they and get into building the relationship, because people will buy people. People will gravitate to you, even if you're a shy person, even if you're an introvert person. There's an awful lot of shy introvert people, so they will gravitate towards you, you see. So I've always focused. And I learned this from a lovely mentor, John Callanch, who sadly is not around anymore, massive network marketer. But he would focus very much about building the relationship first. Don't even talk about business. So I learned that, and then combined with this concept of asking questions. This was something I learned from Alan Pease. And Alan Pease basically says, listen, if you don't know what to say to somebody, ask about them. Right. Because here's the interesting thing. Human beings always feel more comfortable when they're talking about themselves. And it's not just arrogance, it's not just ego. We feel if we don't know what to say to people, we're always comfortable about talking about ourselves. So for your viewers' sake, I would say, well, then use that. Right. Here's all you have to do. Just ask people questions. Hey, listen, I saw you were at that restaurant the other day. Listen, I was going to take my wife there. What was it good? Did you enjoy the food? I saw you that you're into football. You know, which team do you support? Or whatever it might be. Fine. It could be about their work. It could be about their lifestyle. It could be something about holidays. Just learn to ask questions. And by just that little skill, you will find you will build stronger relationships. Why? Because people love to talk about themselves. So that's the first thing I learned about the importance of, before any business, build the relationship, and how you can build the relationship is from asking people about them. Ask questions.
Excellent. Absolutely fantastic. There you go, guys. Amazing point that Steve's made, where you just kind of find, because when another thing here, Steve, is when people join an opportunity, obviously they want to attract people to them, and they kind of, because they're very inexperienced in the right way to do things, they kind of just send out their links and say, look, you join my opportunity today, it will get you rich. You know, it's a lack of training in my perspective in that. But rather than doing that, What is another way they can actually kind of approach people? Obviously, you just highlighted the fact that get to know these type of people first, find out what they're doing in their lives, what is it that they're looking for, and how your business can help them. But adding value to other people's lives rather than pushing the financial aspect of it, what's your idea about that?
It's sadly, and I will get on a little soapbox just for 30 seconds. The one thing that I find very disappointing in the industry, it's a cliche where everybody says, help other people. This was Zig Ziglar. Help other people get enough of what they want, and you will get what you want.
Excellent.
Well,
yes.
Sadly, that has not been embraced by the majority of people in online direct sales, network marketing. They look at someone as a vehicle to get what they want.
Right.
They look at someone to say, how will you help me get closer to my dreams, princess? How will you help me get in that BMW car? How will you get me on that beach with that lovely glass of cold wine in my hand? How will you get me what I want?
Excellent.
And the soapbox, I would say, stop focusing on you. Start focusing on what it is about the other people. Now, the viewers listening in now will probably say, yeah, we've heard that before. I know you may have heard it before, but what I would ask anyone is, do you adopt it? Do you actually have that? When you speak to someone, when you communicate with someone, when you build a relationship with someone, are you focused in what's important to them? And let me take it a stage further. I had a lady on this morning, just before you and I came on and started chatting now, and I actually said to her, this business, our business isn't for you.
Right.
And she said, why? And I said, because, we explored it more. And I said, because, and there were key reasons, and I won't embarrass this lady, but the reality was it wasn't right for her. Now, how did I know that? Because I took a long time to keep asking about her and finding out about her. And in the end, I found out that she really wasn't, and here's the summary of it, she wasn't prepared to give anything up. You see, starting your own home-based business, people always say, I want, I want, I want. I always say to people, what are you going to sacrifice?
Excellent.
And people say, well, I don't understand what you mean. Yes. They say, something's got to go, because we're all busy people. We're all filling our days right now, all of us, aren't we? So to make time to put that work, we set that work effort, and the income will be here, to find the time to make that work, you've got to release some time. You've got to give up a television program. You've got to perhaps give up, going to whatever sport. There might be something you've got to give up or something. That is why. Now, she wasn't prepared to, Princess. She just wanted her life the way it was and wanted the fruits of success. Well, this wasn't for her. So my point there is we should be focused, all of us, much more is in what's right for you, Princess? What's right for this lady, for this gentleman? What is it that, and find out, and you summed it up brilliantly there. Ask them what they want. Ask them what they're looking for. Ask them really what is it, what matters to them. And it's only then, when you know what matters to them, can you actually have the mindset to work towards what they're after. So I would say forget what you want.
Yes.
I know that sounds crazy. Obviously have your vision board. Have all the things and goals and dreams you want. But when you are speaking to someone, don't think about what they can do for you. Think about how you can help them get what they want.
That's absolutely beautiful, Steve, and absolutely correct, because when people join a business opportunity, their idea is maybe it's the lack of training or understanding that they're getting, but it's about getting numbers in. How many numbers are you going to get in? How many sales are you going to make, right? But if you look at the bigger picture, are these people right for your business? Are they going to stay in your business? Okay, you might get the financial reward of them joining you at the time, but what about the future? Are these people that you want to work with? Are they going to stay with you? Are you going to help each other build a business? So when it comes to short-term success and looking long-term, I think it's very, very important to be picky about who's going to join you in your business opportunity and how you're going to work together, what skill set they can bring into the business as well.
I 100% agree. I think it's people need to be from a point of view. Let's think about when somebody joins your business. whether it's online, direct sales, or whatever, too many people think, oh, the job's done. They join my business, great. And what they didn't do was focus on that person and focus on really whether or not that was right. The irony, as you become an old man like me, you know, and you're a lovely young lady, but what I'm saying is, as people get more, shall we say, seasoned, more experienced, you realize it isn't about loads of numbers. It is about finding someone, and the start of their success is when they join. Not that isn't the I've got someone in my business. They've joined my team. Great, great. That is just the start. That is just the start. And that really, and I in some of the trainings we do, I've actually shared with people. I say, listen, you do realize the minute somebody joins you. Princess, if you join my business, that is the start of our business relationship. Yeah. There is a clock ticking, and it's ticking away there. And if I do not help you, and the key word there is help you, if I don't help you get success in a defined period, now, it's no more than 30 days. Right. In some businesses, it's even shorter. In some, it's even shorter. I guarantee you, every week that goes by, that you are not getting some level of success, your percentage, both your belief is dropping and your action is dropping. Because as we all know, a belief leads to taking action, and action ends up getting a result. If we get a positive result, our belief goes up, we take more action, we get more results. So we have this line that is here. Now, if it goes on that the no action, no results, the belief comes down, I guarantee you, all the work you put in to building that person up, help, maybe they join your business or whatever, within 30 days they're gone if you haven't helped them. Yeah. So one of the things I suppose I've learned by being a seasoned person in this industry is the importance of that window of success that you have with everyone in any business. You've got to help someone get success, and you've got to do it fast, because come 30 days, if they haven't got any action, they're probably gone. They're probably hiding from you. They're not taking your calls. You send them an email, they don't respond. That's because their belief just dropped and dropped. And blame yourself, not you. The person who introduced them needs to blame themselves, because they didn't help that person get the success in that early stage.
That's absolutely fantastic. That's great advice there. There you go, guys. I've got loads of other questions coming in, but they're not kind of relating to what we're talking about. I don't want to go off topic because there's so much more, Steve. I know we're going over the hour now, Steve, and the time just shot by. But if I can just keep you just a few minutes more, just to kind of tap into your experience a little bit more. Steve, so what about positioning yourself? I know some people that join the opportunity, they don't really know about the industry, how it works, how people's behaviors are, what their business is about itself. How long should a person spend studying the market, studying the industry, studying the company that they work with? Should they kind of spend a bit of time knowing their facts and figures first?
I think it's very prudent to do proper due diligence. I think it's very, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're spending $500 or $5,000, or if you're opening a restaurant, $150,000. It's still money, and I'm respectful that, you know, that $500 to start your own sort of online business or direct sales business, that might be all the $500 someone has. So I do believe it's very important to do proper due diligence, look into a company, get all the facts and figures. Do always remember, an opinion is just an opinion. That's all it is, okay? Don't hang over the garden fence asking your next door neighbor about a company you're thinking about, and your next door neighbor hasn't got a clue. That is not due diligence. That's not prudent, you know, facts and figures, okay? So I always say, there's an old saying that people sadly lie, numbers don't. So I always say, you know, basically go and get the actual numbers. Go and get the figures. If it's a public company, great, because there's full transparency. The slight challenge with a private company is you're never really sure what the numbers are, because it's private, and that's the that's the thing behind a private. So I would firstly definitely go and do some little bit of research. But I would also add that, I would temper that with don't spend months, make a decision, you're going to find out. Get the facts, make a decision, and then eventually I always say to people, what's it in your tummy telling you? You know, what we call intuition. What's your intuition saying?
Yeah.
When you're looking at a company or a business, is it a good, does it feel right? Do you like the people? Do they sound good? Do they sound sincere? And, do they align themselves with what you believe in? And if it feels right, I always say, just get on and do it. If you've done proper due diligence and you kind of think, yeah, actually, it all looks good and it feels good, then I would say, just do it. Because at some point, Princess, it's like learning to swim.
Yes,
you can.
Definitely.
We can talk all day long about why learning to swim. But yes. Do you know what's really, eventually I'm going to have to say, come on, Princess, get in the pool. Get in the swimming pool and start splashing around. And as long as you've got a good coach, as long as you've got a good mentor that's there, they're holding you in the pool saying, we're going to do this together, then you'll be fine. But at some point, to every one of your viewers, if they suddenly say, right, I'd like my own business, I'd like to work from home, then eventually they're going to have to say, if it feels good. Now, if it doesn't feel right, if there's something not quite right, my experience would say goodbye. Don't do it. If it doesn't feel right, it usually is all your senses telling you it isn't right.
Absolutely fabulous. The reason why I highlighted this is because, I've worked with a lot of people where they sat on the fence for months, and even me sending information to them, they're still not decisive. They haven't made this. I know Tony Robbins has really, really highlighted the fact that you have to be making powerful decisions in your business and become a habit of making strong, powerful decisions. Not many people have used this kind of muscle in their mind, to practice making powerful decisions. They're always on the fence. So that's why I wanted to highlight the fact that, fine, do your due diligence, find out about the company, but make a decision. Don't go hanging around on the fence and waiting for what's going to happen next, because the company could move right forward. So many people get success and you're missing out just because you're kind of sitting behind watching everything.
Get in the pool. Get in the pool and start splashing around. I'm known as a fence shaker, Princess. So I don't let people sit on the fence. They're like those little birds you see in your garden, and the wind's blowing, and they're sat on the fence there, aren't they? And they're just holding on as the fence. I don't let people do that. I say, listen, if you don't want to work with me, that's fine. I'm happy with that. I just want you to make, because whatever decision you arrive at is the right one because you made it.
Yeah.
But I tell you what I don't want. I don't want to hear maybe, I'm thinking about it. So I spend my life saying, is there anything stopping you from getting going? Is there anything right now? So that allows me to focus right in on what might not be, might be something that concerns them, or might be something they need over a question or something. So I spend my life saying, Princess, is there anything stopping you right now from getting going? So I want to know what it is, you see. So I am quite good at shaking a fence. nobody sits on my fence.
Yeah, it's really good. I learned that the hard way because, I wasn't persistent with people, because I just thought let them make the decision. But my effort and time that goes into that, sending them information, going over stuff, coaching calls, but they haven't yet made a decision. And it wastes a lot of time. You need to be working with certain people. Going back to that topic that we just discussed, choose the people that you want to work with, right? So it's come to a stage after a long learning curve that, you kind of choose people that you work with. Right, Steve, so information overload. There's another thing, Steve, when people come into this industry, they want to learn everything. They get very, very kind of stuck in the information overload type of that kind of trap, and they never get started. How did you deal with information coming to you when you start a new venture, and how did you kind of work through the fact that you need to take action on one certain area and then build upon that?
There's an awful lot of poor, very clever, intellectual people in the world.
Right.
What I mean by that, I'm talking about professors, and that they don't have much money, but they're very bright and they're always learning, they're always learning, they're always learning. We are in the business of action. Action is the commodity of kings in our industry. Wonderful. So I always say to people, you need to know what will do to take you to the next step. You need to know what will take you to the next step, to the next step. If you want to learn everything, let's get you making money. Let's get you changing your life. Let's get you changing the lives of other people first. Let's get that happening. Along the way, you will learn. Now, you will always get somebody saying, but Steve, I need to know before I do. Yeah. And I say, no, we need to do, and then you will know. Yeah. And that's quite simply it. It's very much along a process of learning through action, learning through action. I know that is a lot of people tend to use the ability that they think they're doing something as long as they're learning. They're not. They're only doing something when you're moving the business along, when you're helping to change another life. You yeah. learning is gathering information. You haven't taken any action.
Yes.
You learning is only gathering information. The action of what you know. Now, in the beginning, pretty much any business, you don't need to know much. You didn't suddenly, you know, if any of your viewers have children, you didn't suddenly say to your baby girl or baby boy, right, well, let's go jogging then. Let's, you know, I know you can't walk yet. Yes. Let's teach you how to go jogging. No. The first steps were literally hold mum or dad's hand and just make a couple of steps. Well, that is our business. Now, you can learn to jog. You can learn to sprint, run marathons. But let's just get you learning to take the action first. So my belief is very much I give people bite-sized morsels. You only need this. No, but I need this. And no, you don't. Trust me, you don't. You need to do this. Get an action. An action will get you a result. A result will raise your belief, and so we will move forward. So I think you're 100% correct. There is so much information put on people. Yes. The key is to put in filters in place, which is, again, something Tony Robbins talks about.
Absolutely fantastic. Excellent. Now, there's a really important question coming here from William. Thank you again, William, for joining the show. He's saying, my partner is not supportive of whatever I do. She puts a lot of pressure on me, and she doesn't support me, so I've got that kind of negative going on in the background. My surrounding is negative. So I think here, if I can ask you to highlight the importance of the community, how important is it to join an opportunity where it's got a good community that will help you break away from what your environment is like around you? How do you think that would help?
Well, it's firstly, William, and also many of your viewers are not alone. There yes. are many, I've helped tens of thousands of people change their life in different levels of success, but yeah. I have met many, many, many people. Well, they'll have one partner, a husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend. It could be young people going home and their mum and dad are not supportive. So that happens. That's one of those things. And sometimes some of the most negative people, Princess, are the people you live with. Right. That you actually live yeah. with, you see. So that does happen. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, but here's what I would suggest to William or anyone. Firstly, take the business away from the relationship. In other words, don't keep going, you know, like, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, I love it. And don't try and overcome the partner's, if there is slightly negativity or perhaps they're perhaps cynical or they're always skeptical, they're always running things down, then take the business away. Try and do it when the partner's not around. Try and make phone calls when the partner's not there. Or if that's not possible, go and put it into a corner of the house where you can close the door and then they're not intruding on it. So I always say separate the two to start with. Back to your point, Princess, then surround yourself with a community of like-minded people. In other words, the people that are doing the business, the people that are getting success. Maybe grow yourself by listening to some audios or reading some books or whatever. So keep the two apart initially. Then this is how you win your partner over. Right. What you do, as you get levels of success, reward the partner.
Right.
And how I mean that is just say something like maybe William, for example, he keeps the business completely away from any partner And then what happens is maybe you've got your first, you made your first $100 in your online or your networking business, and say, right, this is what I'm going to do. We are going to go out. We're going to have a little bite to eat, and I'm going to order some champagne, and I'm going to say to my partner, my new home-based business has just paid for this. And I want so that the partner sees the good of the business, not always seeing the partner getting, you know, whoever it might be, well, he's always locked in the bedroom making phone calls. He's always on the computer or whatever. That is all taking someone away from a relationship. So find a way of showing them how they can get a pleasure from the business itself. Maybe take them away, make a little bit more money, have a weekend away. Say, listen, my little online business or my networking business, it's just paid for us to go to Barcelona or Paris or something like that. So find ways, and you will be amazed. As you start to give the partner some success, some fruits of success from the actual business you have, how they start to feel that maybe this is something that really is a plan B that can help them to get closer, because they'll have dreams. The partner will have goals and dreams as well. So that's how I would handle it.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Steve. That's amazing advice. There you go, William. You've got some amazing advice there. Right, Steve, so I want to talk about a bit about you now, right? So when it comes to these challenges that you've come across, and whatever challenges the viewers are facing, whether it's, you know, being redundant from a job or partners or their children not doing well, whatever it is, whatever the challenge is, do you think these things happen to grow you as a person and kind of push you towards something? Is there always something else going on in the spiritual type of world? How do you see that?
Yeah, I... Again, this is where viewers need to put mentors into their life. They need that sort of round table, that circle of skills. I've always had the it was a lovely friend of mine, Tom Schreiter. Some of your viewers may have read Big Al books, the Big Al books. Well, Tom's a lovely friend of mine, and he taught me many, many years ago, it isn't what happens to us that determines our future. It's how we react to what happens to us.
Yeah.
So, yes, I get challenges. Yes, I get bad days, like many of your viewers. I'm sure you get bad days, Princess, absolutely, you know, where things just don't go the way we want. But it isn't really what happens to us. It's how we react. So I've always seen a bad day, a bad moment, and I try not to make them bad days. I try and make them bad hours, you know. So I try and shake it off quite quickly. But I've always had the belief that if something's going wrong, something's not going the way I want it to, I can be really fed up over it, or I can react. It's not what happens, it's how I react to what happens.
Right.
So I try and learn from it. I try and think about it. So to me, a challenge, of course, it's, you know, I'm like every one of your viewers. There's days when I go, my oh my, what was that about? Or that was dreadful, or why, I don't understand, why didn't they join my team, or whatever. We all get that. But I've tried to focus more on how will I react to it. And if by doing that, you will overcome more challenges that way.
Right.
Final thing I would say, people need to be patient. They need to learning new skills is something that people always say, well, I want it, and I want success, and I want it now, and I want it now. How is that that in our normal life we don't... You know, learning to drive a car took us a couple of months. You know, learning to swim probably took us a couple of months. If we did a profession like a doctor or a lawyer or a dentist, it probably took us 4 or 5 years. Why are we so impatient when it comes to our own home-based business?
Yeah.
So I would add to that, you're going to get challenges. Learn to overcome them, but learn from that, but be patient. It's going to take some time to learn new skills so they're just some thoughts that I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, absolutely have, and it's amazing the way that you've just kind of wrapped it up, you know, so beautifully. But guys, it is coming to the end of the show, and it's just so much more we can talk about, but, you know, we don't want to keep you too long, but I'm sure you've picked up so much information on today's show. But as always, Steve, I'd like to wrap up the show by saying, if you can share your dream with the audience and just inspire people.
Well, Princess, well, firstly, thank you to you for inviting me on the show and all the viewers that have put up with me for whatever 90 minutes or so. My dream's a very simple one. It's simple in concept, but we came from a very dark place when I lost all my restaurants, and a lovely friend of mine thought enough of us just to give us a second chance, a plan B, which we grabbed, and initially part-time and then full-time. And over 20 or so years, we have a lovely lifestyle. Somebody would say a dream lifestyle. We live down in the south of Spain, homes around Europe, and live a nice life. But I'm very conscious and very aware of who I am and where I came from. I was a broke pizza man with zero skills, zero experience, and absolutely less than zero money.
Right.
So somebody thought enough of me to help me take on a path and now ultimately change our life. So now we're in a position that we have a nice life. We have enough money. Life is good. We don't have to work if we don't want to work. So my goal, to answer your question, is about contribution. Is about, I personally feel, Yvette, my wife and I, have a responsibility to help other people get what we've got. They might not want all the lifestyle, but I want to take stress out of their life. And by the way, just helping people with their finances, giving them a bit more money in their bank account, can take stress out of their life. I want people to look better and feel better. Why? Because that raises their confidence. That raises their belief in themselves. Their self-esteem goes higher. So my goal is a bit of an odd one. It isn't really about a goal for myself, but it is. It's selfish in that Yvette and I want to contribute. We want the ability to help as many people as we can, as fast as we can, get something beneficial in their life to get closer to their goals and dreams. So that's kind of why we're aligned with the company we're aligned with, but what I'm saying is, from our point of view, we want to change lives. Not as a cliche, but it was something that I realized probably 3-4 years ago. It was the piece that was missing. Yes, we've got money. Yes, we've got lifestyle, nice cars, lovely holidays, happy, healthy children, education. The one piece I'm very happy to and open to admit I did not have was I didn't feel I was making a difference enough. I didn't feel I was contributing to other people enough. Now, we give to charities and do good things. So my goal really is to contribute more, if that makes sense. It might not make sense. I'm
not sure. It does. In my childhood books that I've come across, there's a very inspiring mystic leader. His name's Rumi. And he said that everyone's built for a purpose, and the desire is put into your hearts, and it's up to you to find out what that is. So I think, Steve, going through your journey and everything that you experienced, the money and aspect and happiness of your family is all there. You've experienced what that gives back to you, but there is still something that you want to kind of cover. So absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much, Steve, for joining us on the show today. It's been absolutely incredible. Right,
it's been lovely talking to you, Princess. Thank you so much. And goodbye, and I wish all your viewers, whatever path they take, I wish them huge success.
Absolutely. There you go, guys. And you can connect with Steve. I'll put the link under the video when it's ready, and you can connect with Steve, read his blog, connect with him on Facebook, whatever you want to learn from Steve. He's got lots of amazing blog posts and things like that you can actually pick up from. But guys, thank you very much for tuning in. It's been absolutely amazing show. We've covered so much ground in these 90 minutes or so. And just go back and listen to it all, guys, because there's so much between the lines going on. So when you decide to join an opportunity, first of all, discover what the opportunity is about. What purpose are they serving? Are they into helping other people grow? Because it's not about you here. It's about helping other people get their dreams so you can fulfill yours as well. So think big. Think, you know, grow, you know, have bigger dreams than just fulfilling the kind of short-term goals that you have, right? Think big. So thank you very much for tuning in. I've got an amazing guest coming on Wednesday. Tune in again. You'll see banners coming up on my Facebook or emails, wherever you're subscribed in. You'll see details of that. But thank you so much, and have a fantastic day. Thank you.
Hey, it's Princess Fizz again. I hope you found this show extremely, extremely valuable. Do like and comment and leave a review for this show, and don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends, whoever it will benefit. Go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows if you want to watch the video recording of this show, and leave a comment, write to me. I'd love to hear from my listeners about any suggestions, any takeaways that you had, any suggestions for improvements, and make sure that you sign up to the newsletter as well so you don't miss another episode and you get notified by email. I love you loads. Dream big, chase those dreams, make them a reality so I can bring you onto the I Have a Dream show and share your unique journey with the world.